Hello and welcome back to Connecting to Host. Today we're going to be talking about Offworld Trading Company, a real-time strategy game where the focus is on mining for resources and controlling the stock market instead of combat and warfare. Offworld Trading Company is available now for £30 or €40 on Steam or from Stardock directly, and it's available on Windows and Mac. We played the early access version, but it's actually coming out in just a few days, so exciting times. What are you playing it on, Ben?
I'm playing it on my 5K iMac.
5K, all right.
For not playing it at 5K. I think I'm playing it at 1440, but yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, I've not had any performance issues, so it's all good.
Cool. And I'm playing it on my beast of a gaming PC running Windows, so no performance issues here, surprisingly. Cool. So, yes, there are some single-player features to this game, which we'll quickly rattle over so we can focus on the co-op side. There's a campaign you can play through. There's a daily challenge which pops up, so you can kind of compete online, but you're playing it on your own. And there's a skirmish mode, so you can set up an offline game to train against the AI, I guess. When it comes to multiplayer features, there's a match-based gameplay, so using ranked or just kind of free-for-all lobby. And when you're playing in a lobby, you can limit it to just playing with your friends, but you can also add AI bots to flesh out the match, so you can just play with one or two friends, and also some sort of nice, easy AI, apart from when they kick your ass.
yeah, we lost frequently to the AI, but interestingly, you can't set the difficulty level for the AI. You set your own difficulty level, so you basically give yourself a handicap rather than changing how complex or easy it is for them. Is that right?
Yeah. So each player can have its own handicap, but you couldn't change that for the AI. And I wonder if that will be something which changes in the release version, or if they just decided, no, there's one type of AI and it plays the same. So. Yeah. But we found the handicap buttons for ourselves nice and quick, and then we started to win. So.
Yeah, beginner.
So Ben, do you want to give us a bit of an overview of the setting in the game?
Yeah, sure. It's set on Mars, and I think the basic idea, we had some discussion about this, but we think that you are on Mars setting up a colony, mining resources to send back to Earth because it's set in the future and Earth's used all of its resources up. So the basic idea of the game is that you set up a company on Mars. You're going to mine various resources and sell them on the stock market, with the ultimate aim being to buy out all the other companies that have set up on Mars around you. So when you start the game, the map's completely random, both in terms of layout, different terrains and such, and also what resources are abundant or scarce. And this really plays into the stock market mechanic, because you're basically looking to find what's scarcest, make it yourself so that you can sell it back and make a profit. I mean, we'll go over it in more detail in a minute because the stock market stuff is particularly complex, but it is kind of the core thing of this game. But for the purposes of this episode, I think we'll probably just talk through how a game progresses, really, and talk about each core mechanic.
Yeah, I think that's good. It's a pretty tough game, I think, to sum up in a podcast format. But I think if we try and cover each of the again, how you play a game from start to finish and each of the main mechanics that you interact with, then hopefully we can get a good picture of what's going on. So I'll kick off with the very start of a new match. And it begins with a randomized map, as Ben said. And in the middle of that is it the colony outpost, right?
I think so. It's some
the
sort
marketplace.
Of yeah.
Mm. But you actually have a fog of war over the remainder of the map. And you get every 5 or 10 seconds or so, you get like another scan, which lets you see just a small area of the map. And you can only go out from places that you've already done. So you can kind of all start to go off looking at it. And you obviously quickly, hurriedly clicking over the map to try and find out where the resources are, what sort of resources are in abundance. Maybe a good place to start your headquarters so that you can start to have the best access to most resources. But you want to have a good picture of whether there's a lot of carbon or a lack of water, say, so that you kind of know what's going to happen in the market before you commit. Because if you see loads of water and go, this could be the only water, build your base there, and then the whole map is covered in water, and all the really expensive resources are miles away, then you've you made a poor start to the game and you're going to be in trouble.
And that is important because when you mine stuff, you do have to ship it back to your base, which takes time, unless you get a certain pattern, which we'll come to later. But it's important to choose the best place for your base so that you aren't having to travel miles and miles in order to pick up these resources, because the time taken to do that will affect how much you can effectively mine.
But on the flip side, you don't want to take too long picking your starting location, otherwise someone else might get there first. And that's happened to me many times. Oh, yep. This is starting to look good. Just about to click and then scientific colony founded. You're like, no! But one important part of the pre-game is that you also have to pick your headquarter type. And that's something which you do while you're scanning the planet, so you can make this decision dynamically. And there's four different types of headquarters you can build. There's expansive, robotic, scavenger, and scientific. And each one comes with its own, I guess, kind of own set of perks and disadvantages. So, for instance, the expansive colony gets more claims, which we'll talk a bit more about later, whereas the robotic colony doesn't need to worry about fewer sort of water and food and oxygen because they're all robots. But then they don't get the bonus claims like the expansive ones have. So maybe they're a slightly easier one to start with, but you don't get other benefits. Then there's the scavenger headquarters, which builds their buildings using carbon instead of steel, which is kind of interesting because everyone else is kind of steel hungry, so they can start to upgrade their kind of headquarters and their other buildings. But you don't have to worry about that stock complexity. And then there's the scientific base, which gets more use of research, so they can research some more of the advanced technology quicker. So, it's. I don't think I've really got that ability yet to look at the map, pick the right headquarters, and start to play it optimally.
No, I mean, we always played as expansive, didn't we? Did you play as robotic? I can't remember.
I played as robotic a couple of times, and I think that's quite a good starting choice because it's with the other headquarter types, you start off having to worry about food and water and you're instantly going into debt.
Yeah, that's true.
So you're instantly under stress with robotic, you're not. So
that's true. One of the really interesting things about this game is when it comes to mining and buildings, you are very, very limited in what you can do due to the system that they have called claims, which is when you can basically, I think you start off with 5 claims, it might be more than that, I think it's around 5. And that allows you to choose a hexagonal tile and claim it as your own, so no one else can build on it. Now, usually a tile will have something in it like resources like carbon or aluminium, so you'd claim it so that you can build an aluminium mine on top of it, for example. But some have multiple purposes, so sometimes you might have 2 different elements to mine, or you might be able to build a wind farm there, or a solar panel, whatever you might want to do. But you only have a limited number of claims. So once you've built the first 5 buildings, you can't do anything else unless you upgrade your headquarter and get more claims, which makes it very, very difficult because unlike most real-time strategy games where you're only limited by how much money you have, in this you're not at all. You could be rolling in money but not be able to build anything that you want because you have no claims available to you. Which I think is a really cool mechanic, but it is also quite harsh because you really don't get many claims. So there are
unforgiving.
Yeah, I mean, it works well once you understand how it all plays together, but it is pretty harsh when you start. There are 13 different, not really elements, but 13 different things that you can trade in. I can't name them all off the top of my head, but they're things like water, oxygen, fuel, power, carbon, steel, and so on. And the way that you get these is you will typically mine them from the ground, be it something like iron. You'd put a mine and just start taking it over time. But then you can also get factories which will convert iron into steel so that you can then have that resource. So some of them are dependent on other things to manufacture them. Because of the way the stock market works, you don't necessarily have to have both parts of that process. So, for example, if you wanted to make steel, whilst you could build an iron mine and a steel one and then take all of the iron out of the ground and convert it into steel, you could instead just buy a load of iron from the stock market and then manufacture steel that way instead. So you've got quite a lot of flexibility, and there's different things you can do with power, for example. You can build on a geothermal vent, which will give you a lot of power, but I think it's quite expensive when you first start out, and there's only certain tiles you can do that on. Or you
I've
can
only ever
have.
seen like a two or three in a map. I mean, maybe there's been the odd map, there's been a few more, but they're quite rare, aren't they? The geothermal tiles, because then you get an awful lot of power if you're near one at the start.
Yeah, they're spread out, but if you can choose a good spot, I mean, that's kind of a key thing when I'm looking for a place to put my base, is choosing a geothermal vent nearby. But you can use wind power or solar, but the solar panel obviously doesn't work at night, and there is a proper full day and night cycle. So for half the time, you won't get any power, which is not ideal. So typically, you would have one solar panel and one wind farm, usually, or something like that. But it's interesting. There are an awful lot. You've got special buildings as well. I guess you could probably cover that better than me.
Yeah, so once you've started collecting resources, and you might use your first couple of levels of your headquarters on just worrying about resources, then you end up thinking, hang on, I've got a few extra claims here. And then you start to get some spare. And there's five different types of special buildings that you can then build onto your headquarters. These are an engineering lab, a hacker array, a patent lab, pleasure dome, and the off-world market. And each one of these things opens up a whole new set of features that you can access in the game. So you only have to build one of each. I mean, the pleasure dome, I guess, is the first one, and that just gives you income. So that doesn't really open up too much more gameplay. But the other four are really interesting. And then there's the engineering lab, which lets you upgrade your factories or your mines so that they produce more resources.
It's a good way of getting around the claim limit.
Yeah, precisely. And I find myself, I like this building. I will always try and have it at some point in my game because, like you say, you've only got a limited number of claims and you want to produce more carbon and you can selectively upgrade. It's quite expensive to upgrade because it uses the chemical resource, which is not something you can just mine. It's one of the ones that you have to have a factory for and certain resources to feed into that factory. So it's not the easiest to make and it usually ends up quite expensive. But so you have to selectively upgrade. But it's nice that you can kind of go, looks like electronics are really expensive in this game. I'm going to bump up my production of those and make more. But it's a simple special building because it just increases the efficiency of your mines, etc. But it's very useful.
Definitely useful when you're limited to how many mines you can build.
Yeah, and especially if there's limited spots for building mines. I mean, not only have you got to contend with claims, but if there's only three spots on the map with carbon, and you've only got one of them, then you have to make the best of it. So then there's the hacker array, which lets you temporarily manipulate the stock market. So I guess we'll talk more about the stock market in a little bit. All these features kind of loop back into each other, so it's hard to pick an order to talk about them. But obviously the stock market primarily works around buying and selling, and then the price goes up and down. And the hacker array lets you manipulate that price. So you can say, there's now a shortage in food, so the price will skyrocket. And then you can sell the massive stockpile of food that you've been selling. But obviously other players will see that price change as well. And if they have a stockpile of food, they can jump on the bandwagon. And I've done that a few times because I've never bought a hacker array. But have you, Ben?
No, I have when I've played it on my own, like doing a little skirmish or something. But I don't think I ever bought one in the games that we played, just because I find it the least useful from the way that I tend to play. I tend to like building lots of mines, getting basically one of every resource and then upgrading them as much as possible so that they're generating a huge amount of income. And then I'm pretty well protected to the fluctuations in the market, because if something goes out of price crashes, it doesn't really matter because I've got lots of other income that can come in. And then if something does go up in price, then I've got loads of it sitting idle that I can sell. So I tend not to do it so much. I probably should. But the problem is, with so few claims, I have other buildings I would rather build than the hacker array. But it's useful. I mean, it's one of the nice things about this game is that there are loads of different ways you can play it. Lots of different styles of play. So for a lot of people, they might just use the hacker array. And I think you can build multiple of them because there is a cooldown period on it. I believe I'm pulling this completely out of my ass, but I'm pretty sure that you can build like two of them so that you can do multiple hacks at the same time rather than waiting for the cooldown. And if that's not a feature, it totally should be.
Yeah, see it in a week's time. But yeah, that's a good building. The only reason I haven't used it is because the game's complicated enough.
Yeah.
It's fast-paced and keeping track can be quite hard. And I think maybe when I become more of an expert, I'll be able to use it proficiently. But at the moment, I would be kind of, I think I'd just be going, maybe I can do this. Click, 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 click. And it may or may not pay off. So I don't get a good enough long-term vision of the strategy yet. But it's definitely an interesting building that you can build later on. So then there's the patent lab, which allows you to, there are something like 12 or 13 unique technologies in the game, and only one player can ever own them, and you use this building to acquire those. There was that funny moment in the last game that we played where we both researched the same thing.
Yes, but only one of us got it because one of us researched it faster than the other.
It was you bastard.
It was me. That had been teleportation, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's the
by far
the one that we always rush for, isn't it? But these range from a complete variety of things. So there's the teleportation, which removes the need to transport your goods back and forth, both reducing the time it takes and the cost of fuel to do that. So if you've got a lot of mines on the go, it's a really good pattern to grab.
And also reduces the risk of them being destroyed by other people, which we'll come to shortly. But yeah, it's a great pattern.
But then there are other ones, and one of them is you get to recuperate. So everyone can obviously be in debt to some degree in the game, and the debt grows over time, so you try and pay it off. But one of the patents allows you to accrue some of that debt. So if the other players are in debt, then you actually get a bit of a monetary bump every time their debt goes up, or the interest on their debt is accrued. So that's kind of interesting. And then there's one that doubles the power output for all of your buildings, which I found really useful, is the robotic headquarters.
There's one that lets you do lets you power your vehicles with water rather than fuel, which is useful if you happen to have a ton of water but no fuel.
And also it's one of those things where people might be trying to bump the price of fuel up because they know that you can't produce it, and then as soon as you get this patent, I don't need it anymore. So really interesting the way it changes the dynamic of play when you grab these special upgrades.
But to get the patents, you have to not only have the what's it called, the patent lab, but you also have to pay a certain price in chemicals. And again, as we sort of mentioned earlier, chemicals are not the first thing that you will get because you require so many other things to build to generate chemicals. But I also find it really weird that both the patent lab and engineering lab use them, because the first thing that I tend to do is to get my chemical mine up and running, and then upgrade it to the maximum with the engineering lab so that I'm generating as many chemicals as possible so that I can then acquire as many patents as possible. In that, I find it, I kind of think that it'd be better if they used a different resource for the patent lab, maybe, or if there was some monetary cost to it as well, rather than just chemicals, because I think it's a little bit easy, if you know what you're doing, to just get all the good stuff straight away. But then I guess anyone could do it, so that makes it fair. But I do find it a bit odd.
I think, like you say, there's maybe it impacts when you've got different skilled players.
Yeah. And again, like anything in this game, because there's so many different styles of play, some people will go for the patents and they want to just do that style of locking down all of these things to make it optimal for them. But other people are going to be doing other things, like they might be manipulating the stock market such that your patents are essentially worthless anyway. So it's difficult to say which way is better.
But then there's the fifth and final building, which is the off-world market. And as we said at the start, the overall idea of the game is that you're going to send resources back to Earth, and they'll pay a lot for resources because they don't have any. So even ones, and the stock market prices for Earth, I think they're completely different
they are
to the
completely
ones
different.
In the game, right?
Yeah.
So you might end up sitting on a big pile of water, which on the planet, Mars, is worthless, but actually on Earth they're desperate for it. So you can take 100 units of your resource and ship it back to Earth. And that process takes a long time because it has to go into a rocket and it takes time to load the rocket, and then it takes time for it to get to Earth, and you need to get the money. So it's not fast to keep sending rockets up, but you get a massive pile of cash injection when you do that. And this is obviously one of the end game things that you build to, because the off-world market itself is really expensive to build. It needs a lot of resources, which usually equates to quite a lot of money. And there's a lot of time involved, but when these start to come out, you know that you're reaching the end game. And if you don't have one, and everyone else does, you've probably lost.
One of the key things with them, though, is that they use up an awful lot of power in order to fire the rockets. And quite often, because the power fluctuates through the game, depending on what buildings you're using. Like, if you're researching a pattern, then that pattern lab will be drawing power, whereas it doesn't when it's idle. Or at least it doesn't draw anywhere near as much. And it's the same with the off-world market. So you build everything and you look and you're like, okay, I've got plus 0.2 power, so that's all good. And then you start trying to ship one of these things off, and then your power goes to like minus 2.5, and you realize that you're suddenly being charged $100 a second for power or whatever it might be. And it's like, oh my God. And I had that in the last game that we played, and I was frantically building a geothermal vent whilst the rocket was taking off. And then just as it finished building geothermal vent, the rocket launched and my power went back up, and then I got all the power from the vent as well. So it was like, oh, you've now got plus 8 power. And it's like, oh, I hadn't realised that's what was causing the drain.
Nice.
But I won, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, you did.
I guess the black market's an interesting thing. I mean, they say that the game doesn't have any warfare, which isn't strictly true, because the black market is how you will damage other players. So you don't literally go out and like generate tanks and stuff and shoot people, but you can do things like drop electromagnetic pulses on their buildings, or you can do things like organize riots or mutinies, which will start sending the resources of a certain building back to you. You can use pirates to blow up their little ships that are transporting goods back and forth. So there's all kinds of different tactics that you can use. But the interesting thing about the black market is that there is a cost for each of these things you want to do. So, for example, organizing a mutiny might cost $1,000. But once you've bought it, the price goes up for everyone. It goes up more for you because you bought it. But for everyone else, it also goes up a fraction of the price as well. So by the end game, it gets ridiculously expensive to use the black market because you've already used it so much. So you can't just keep electromagnetically pulsing someone over and over and over and over again. Well, you can if you've got enough money.
Unless you're dirty rich.
Yeah. It does get exponentially more expensive. But the other good thing about the black market is that you can buy more claims through it. Although those also go up exponentially as well. And most people will try and buy them as soon as possible because they're cheap. So it's like $1,000 for a claim, and it's like, yes. But then when it gets to like $30,000 for a claim, you're like, maybe not until the later game. The other thing with that is,
I think in one or two matches, because the icons are randomized, right?
So yeah, I think there's about,
not always the same ones.
Yeah, there's quite a few different options for the black market. I don't know the exact number, maybe 15. And I think it randomly selects 8. So you don't always get the option to buy extra claims or to organise mutinies or whatever it might be. They are random each time, which is nice.
Yeah, it mixes the game up. It's pretty cool. And again, I guess it comes down to the complexity of the game. I haven't interacted with them that much, but I do like them.
Yeah, it is good. And the other thing also to mention with the black market, and it's kind of related but separate, is auctions, which is sometimes stuff will just get auctioned by the game itself randomly. So you'll just get a little knock, knock, knock sound, and it'll go, oh, we've got a pattern for auction. $10,000 for teleportation. And then you can click to increase the price by however much it says. And then there'll be a 5-second countdown. And then if no one else clicks the buy button, then you get it. And the price just rises up like an auction. but the interesting thing with that is that the money doesn't come out of your account. It just gets added to your debt. So the AI, for some reason, seems to be cash happy. and the AI will just bid on all of this stuff crazily until it's got like a C debt rating and it's got like £100,000 of debt.
Which makes that patent worth accruing interest from opponents' debts very useful against AI.
Very, very useful. Like, I'm always very proud of my AAA debt rating. Like, I always pay off my debt immediately, like a Lannister. But unfortunately, that doesn't actually help. It seems that you might be better off just getting into a huge amount of debt because it doesn't actually matter.
Yeah, I don't feel right being in debt, but you might be right.
Yeah.
So I guess this leads us on to the stock market, which, while a core feature, isn't particularly complicated, but constantly down the left-hand fifth of the screen, there is the stock market is always on show because it's obviously that important to the game. And it shows you the quantity of each of the 13 resources that you currently have, or in the terms of power, how much you're generating or not each second, as well as, I suppose it also tells you that for the other resources, you get to see how much you are generating or losing per second. So you can kind of get a feel for how well you're doing. Am I making enough water? And like Ben said, I mean, sometimes it's misleading because there's a reason why it's particularly high or low. But for the most part, it's really useful because you get a very good grasp of your resources, how many you're making, how many you're spending, and the current price of them. Now, you can also buy or sell the resources on the stock market, either individually in clumps of 10 or clumps of 100. And it's important to note that the price of that resource on the stock market changes immediately when you make a purchase. But obviously, if you buy 100 items, they're all at the listed price, and then the price will change in a big way compared to if you were to buy 100 items individually, and then the price would gradually change. So, I mean, if you're selling items specifically and there's a really good price, you just want to sell 100. Or you might even be able to control click and sell all of them. I'm not sure.
No, I think there's a limit. I think 100 is the limit. Or maybe 1,000. I think it's 1,000. I think, does it?
Ah.
It might be 10, 100, and 1,000 that you can sell. I don't know.
And 1,000 is a lot. I mean, I don't think I've ever had 1,000 for a resource.
Yeah, I could be lying. I think it might be 10 and 100.
Maybe, yeah. But I know there is a key combination you can push that just sells everything you own.
Is there?
Yeah, it's like Control Alt down, and it just, everything you have is sold immediately. So if you want to rush to buy someone out at the end, you can do that. I saw that in a tooltip on the last game we played.
Oh, what? Oh, I wish I knew about that. Because the last time we played, I was selling by holding down shift and just clicking through. And it's like the price was just disappearing until it was like $1 per 100. It's like, I don't care. Sell them all. Whereas if I'd sold them all at a fixed price, that would have been way better. Oh.
But I guess, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's very useful to have it there, and it gives you all the information you need. The only magic, I guess, worth talking about is that if you have a setup where you desperately need food or oxygen, then it will just automatically buy it. And this is especially true of power. So if you find yourself in a situation, for instance, when you're firing rockets back to Earth and you have a high power usage, then you might have a negative power rate, which is quite high, so -5 or -6. And then you'll see next to it that this is actually costing you $500 a second. Hopefully that's a temporary situation. Otherwise, you're screwed. But it's really nice to see that information there. Definitely, it is the information you need. It's not necessarily that easy to follow because of all the things driving that market and the resources. But it's really cool that it's there.
Really, really interesting mechanic because it's all changing in real time depending on what other players are doing. So if I'm just playing along, doing whatever I'm doing, and John is suddenly builds a load of mines and gets a ton of water, then the price of water will go up or down depending on what he's doing with it. Like if he still doesn't have enough water because he's got the patent to power all of his buildings and vehicles with water, so he's using up a load, then it might be that the price is going up because all of the water is being mined, but all of it is being used. So there is a shortage, so the price goes up a huge amount. So if later in the game he acquires teleportation and he doesn't need all of that water suddenly, the price will probably still stay up there for a while, and then he's in a very strong position to sell it all and make a huge amount of money. And it's those kinds of things that are really interesting. It's definitely a game about numbers because the whole point of it is stock market manipulation, really, and being clever enough to try and spot the trends and sell what you don't need and buy what you do need at a low price. In terms of the auto buying, you can turn it on and off for certain buildings. So, for example, if you have a steel factory, I think by default, if you don't have any iron, it won't make any steel. But you can click a button somewhere so that it will auto buy from the market. But you've got to watch out for that, because if if there suddenly becomes a shortage and the price spikes right up, then you suddenly might be spending, you know, $200 to make steel that you can only sell for $20. So it does cause problems.
But I think it's really cool that, like, this is one of the features of the game that I really like, is that you can be in a scenario, because the claims are so limited and you have to be really careful about what you build. If you see that the map has an awful lot of, say, silicon mines, and you know that silicon is a key ingredient for electronics, you might decide that the value of electronics is going to be five times that of silicon, because there's so much silicon being mined. And you might not even bother building a silicon mine. You might build two electronics factories so that you can create more of the really expensive resource and just buy the silicon from other people. I think that's really cool. I mean, I tried that in the last game I played, and it didn't work out for me. It wasn't those resources exactly. I tried something similar.
The trick with that, though, is to build your electronics mine on top of the silicon. You won't get the silicon, but then if suddenly someone screws you over and starts selling silicon for a ridiculously high price, you can destroy that one electronics building, but you've still got the claim, so you can then build the silicon mine on top. So,
I guess the last thing before we move on to the next step, but that's a really good idea. But then there's also the temptation to build everything near each other, because there's an adjacency bonus.
Yes.
So, ideally you would build your two electronics factories next to each other and one or both of them was on silicon. But obviously if they're built right next to your base, there's no cost in transporting it back. But if you build it a fair way away on the silicon, you've got the redundancy, but you're paying to transport it. So I think that's like that one example of how everything is integrally tied together in this game, and I think that's really cool. Like,
and even further to that, if you do
affects everything else.
If you do build everything right next to your base in a snake-like pattern, so it's all connected, so that you get it really quick, then there is a black market thing, which if you drop it on one building, it disables all the ones that are connected to it. So if you just have everything spiral out of your base, then that goes very, very badly wrong very quickly. I guess the final thing to mention is about actually how you win the game, which is buying out other people. So when you're playing, in the top right-hand corner, there's a list of all the other players, and it shows how many shares they own in their own companies, and the stock price of that company. So, for example, I think you start with maybe 4 shares in your own company. I could be making that
definitely up again. on the settings we've played it with. I think it might be different for different settings.
But yeah, so we started off with 4. And basically all you have to do is buy all the shares of the other companies to win, which sounds simple, but it's difficult because they get very, very expensive. So you can only buy one share at a time, and then I think it's 100 times the stock price, 1,000 times the stock price. I'm not sure.
1,000, I think.
So if it's like $18, then you would pay 18,000 to buy. That makes sense. That's correct. So you can buy them, but then when all the shares are gone, you have to basically buy them out completely, which means buying all the remaining ones at cost price. So if I bought 6 shares in John's company and he's got 4, then I then have to pay to buy all the remaining 4 all at once. And every time you buy shares in his company, his stock price is going to go up because it looks like he's doing well. And obviously, as he's playing the game and making more money and doing well anyway, you're going to have a higher stock price, so it gets very expensive to do it, and it basically leads to a mad dash at the end where you're selling all of your resources as quickly as possible so you have enough money to buy everyone else out, and that's how you win
or lose, as I did.
Yes. You would have lost a lot quicker if I knew I could just dump all of my stuff at once.
Cool. So I guess hopefully that gives a good picture of the game. It's again quite hard to think of it, but all the elements together are tied together into an awesome game. So maybe we should move on to what we liked and disliked about the game.
Sure. So. Well, I'll start off then. I really like the stock market. I really like the mechanic and the fact that this is a game that is ostensibly a real-time strategy game, and it looks like, you know, you're going to be building buildings and sending troops around, but it's not at all. It's just about money and figures, buying the right resources, selling them, you know, buying them at cheap price, selling them at a high price, buying shares and taking over other people's companies. I think it's a really good idea for a game, and it's been very well executed in this sort of sci-fi fantasy look and feel to it.
And I think it's a nice, in terms of gameplay, it feels like a nice blend between a video game and a board game. I mean, it's too complicated to be a real board game.
Yes.
But it has that kind of feel, like you're going to go in, play for 20 minutes, 30 minutes for a game, and hopefully win.
Yeah, I mean, I've played board games which do have stock markets and stuff like this, specifically the 18XX games, which are all about trains and typically take about 8 hours to play. They usually have a very solid stock market mechanic where you do have this kind of... the aim of the game is to buy companies, not how much money you yourself make. It's whether or not you can buy out the other people. So there are games that do it, but this does it in a much better way. I think saying it feels a bit like a board game is about right. It's sort of like a nice split between the two.
And that leads me on to one of my likes, and that is the match length. And I think it's just the right length, about 20 to 30 minutes, I think most of our games took.
Yeah.
You get a nice build-up phase where you're making your decisions early on. Then you kind of get the tense middle phase where you're thinking, right, now I need to play out my strategy. I might have a backup, but... you're sort of trying to enact your strategy, and then you get to the end game. Sometimes the end game suffers, which I'll come on to in a dislike, but because it feels predecided. But I do like the match length. You know, it's not never too long. I never sit in the game, I've lost. Oh, it's so boring. Come on, 20 more minutes before I can actually lose.
And also, I mean, with that, you've also got the fact that you're always busy. You're never just sat around watching money trickle in. Like with a lot of real-time strategies, you know, you're waiting to get a certain amount of money so that you can then build the next building and mine the next resource or do whatever it might be. Whereas with this, there's so much going on all the time that you're constantly firefighting everything. So you don't really feel like you're just waiting. Like you might be looking going, oh, I just need enough resources to upgrade my HQ. But then someone will electromagnate something and just constantly battling everything. And on that
that's
note,
another thing. Sorry, that's another thing I like is the complexity, and you feel tense all the way through because you're not quite sure if you're winning or losing.
Yeah.
And it's complex enough that you always feel like you don't quite know everything, so it is tense, but you know enough.
Yeah.
You can see your money. You can see that you've got a lot of food, and food is worth a lot of money, so you're doing well. And you can see that someone started buying out, so you're in trouble. You can get a basic feel very easily, but to learn all of it, whew, it's complicated.
Yeah. But I think that's one of the nice things about it. It's got a lot of depth to it.
Mm.
And it's, from my point of view, it's nice to play a real-time strategy for a change, because you don't get many of these kinds of games anymore. Like we used to, like in the 90s, it was practically all we ever played was just things like, you know, Command and Conquer, or even things like SimCity, where you're, you know, all that sort of isometric top-down view where you're building stuff. Don't tend to get much of it around now. So I really like this for not only being part of that genre, but for mixing it up a huge amount and being very different to other things. This isn't just your standard RTS. It's a lot more than that.
A couple of other things that I like. I really enjoyed the fact that we could add AI to our matches. I felt like if we were just playing one-on-one, then maybe, you know,
that wouldn't
sometimes
be fun.
When you're just, no, it's not quite
for you.
I mean, some game, ha ha ha, touche. Some games are fun when you play just head to head, but this is the sort of thing where I think sometimes you know that you're losing, but when there's AI involved, you can crush the AI first, and that's always fun. So you always get a sense of beating someone.
Yeah.
Like we're both beating the AI. And then when someone buys out both the AI, you know that you're next.
It's the Mario Kart effect. It's like, you know, if you just had two people in Mario Kart, it'd be horrible. But when you've got eight, you can feel slightly better when you finish third.
Yeah, definitely.
Whereas when you finish third in a two-player game, you know you're doing really bad.
But it's probably happened to you then, Ben, right?
Yeah, I'm not very good at Mario Kart.
So then there's the other thing that I really like is the... So a lot of the sound samples, I'm almost certain, were just computer generated in the early access phase. I think this is actually might change in a few days when they release the film.
I hope not.
But I'm not sure about all the samples, but maybe they'll change some of them, but there's some of the sound samples that have just become a staple enjoyment of the game. And one in particular is when it goes, "Look at all the money," in a computer voice. And then obviously sometimes when bad things happen on the black market to your base, it's like, "I hate those damn bandits." But yes, I don't know why they're particularly amusing, but "look at all the money" has become a bit of a catchphrase between us because it's such a, I don't know, memorable phrase.
It's because it's using like that, you know, if like you use like the text to speech feature of a Mac where it like reads out, like before Siri came along and they got quite good at making voices sound vaguely human, like back in the 90s when it was just terrible, it just sounds like that, like really robotic, terrible sound.
But maybe that's what it is.
That's what
like
makes it
a
funny.
Throwback. Throwback to retro gaming.
High quantities of carbon found. That's great. I love it.
Like Megalomania in the Mega Drive. But yeah, so let's move on to some dislikes. Ben, do you want to kick this off?
Yeah, my first dislike is a bit harsh because it's purely about the marketing for the game, and that they're very like on the Steam page. It's very much like, "Oh, it's the first RTS game with no warfare. Like, oh, there's no combat." It's not true. The black market is definitely combat. It's very combative when you're destroying people's ships, knocking out their mines or stealing their resources. So I think that's a bit disingenuous. But also, the black market itself is insanely harsh when you're winning. Because if you start winning, especially in a game with maybe four people, and you're rolling in money, you've got loads of resources. People just use the black market and just constantly target you, so you can't do anything. Like, you just get electromagnetic pulse thrown at you, then power surge, and then a mutiny, and then some pirates, and you just can't do anything because you're just locked out. But the black market also is locked out to you when other people are using it, I think. I could.
Yeah, so whenever someone uses a black market, no one can access it at all for the next 30, 45 seconds, I guess. And when there's four players, if the AI specifically are kind of just buying things really quick on the black market, it's hard to get a look in sometimes.
Yeah, so it's difficult. I mean, it's not a big dislike, but it does feel very harsh when you're winning. And it's definitely not true that there's no warfare. I mean, yes, you don't build soldiers and send them out individually, but you do,
Attack.
destroy stuff.
And I agree with that. I mean, that leads into one of my dislikes, and it's just I mean, there's a lot going on. Sometimes it's a bit too much. I mean, I know it's hard in a game that you play online to mediate it better, but sometimes I'm just feeling like, what the is going on? And especially with the black market attacks, and it's, I guess, going back to Mario Kart, it's the kind of the magic, the lightning bolt or the blue shell. You know, it's like when you're at the front, you just get hit by all the shit all the time. You're like, ah, I
You
don't
know
even know
that you're
why.
in number one position only temporarily until that blue shell turns up, but you can't stop. Now, who would have thought that our biggest comparison to this game would be Mario Kart?
So.
I guess one of my dislikes is that it seems to me that there are a few key things that will let you win most matches. So teleportation is a big one, because the advantages for having that are huge, and there isn't a disadvantage to that one. Most things tend to have a good mix, a very well-balanced mix of advantage and disadvantage, but teleportation is purely, oh, well, you've got 80 chemicals and you researched it first, so now they can't get bombed. You're getting all your resources instantly every second, and it doesn't. You're not spending as much money on fuel, so well done you. I don't even think it adds like a massive power draw, which seems like it should. It'd be a fair balance to that. It would be like, okay, well, yeah, you're not paying for fuel anymore, but you're going to use a lot more power. But it doesn't have that, which I guess is because it's a patent. It's supposed to just be a benefit, but I kind of feel that there are a few of those which make it a bit too easy to win sometimes. Not every time, but a lot of the time.
No, I agree with that. The teleportation we always rush to, don't we?
Yeah,
So.
it just needs a little bit more balancing. Like, overall, I think the balance is perfect. I think they've done a really good job of balancing out all the different factions and all the different stuff that go on. Like we were saying a minute ago, if you're building buildings in a snake-like pattern, there's an advantage to it and a disadvantage. That's true of nearly everything, but there are still a few bits where it's just a little bit more fine-tuning needed, I'd say.
And I guess my final dislike is just that there's been a few matches and you get two-thirds of the way through and I think you kind of know where it's going. And I mean, some matches are great right to the end. You think, I can win this, I can win this. I just need to send more rockets back. But then sometimes you know that you've lost.
Yeah.
And that might be two-thirds of the way through the game. And then the last, you know, 5 or 6 minutes are a bit miserable because you're just kind of going through the motions even though you know you've lost. So, because there's not, if you're losing, there's not much to do. It's not, does that make sense? It's not like a to-do in game. You're not sending units around. You're just kind of losing.
It used to be in one of the earlier versions of the game, because I've been playing it for quite a long time now. So I've seen it iterate as they've been through early access. And one of them, I'm pretty sure, when you bought out another company, then it basically got absorbed into yours and you got all of their resources and all of their buildings and all of their stuff, which either made you insanely powerful because suddenly you'd bought something and now you had even more resources. You had like 20 more buildings generating money for you, which seemed fair because you were buying the company. So, of course, you should own it. And that was quite good because it also, if you knew you were about to be bought out, it meant you could screw people over because you could just sell all the buildings and start buying loads of really expensive stuff, running up a ton of debt. So when they bought you, you basically didn't do a great job for them. But they changed that probably for that reason. And now when you buy them out, it becomes a subsidy, but not one that you manage. It's just, you know, you've spent your money, you own the company, but you don't get anything. You don't get their resources or buildings or anything like that. Mm. They're basically just out of the game and you can ignore them. And I kind of don't like that either, because that's not quite, that doesn't seem right to me, because then you can't predict what they're going to do, how it's going to work. And when you get bought out, there's not much to do at all. Well, nothing, because you've been bought out, so you're done. So yeah, I agree. I think it could be slightly better the end part. But overall it's good.
Yeah, I guess in summary, I mean, I feel like the game's very replayable, but maybe we're not going to play it over and over and over. I think it's, I guess, it, again, like a board game, we'll probably come back to it every month or two and just play a match or two. I think that's probably how I envision myself playing it. I wouldn't sit down and say, hey, we've both got a full Saturday off, let's play this for 12 hours. No, I think, but the odd hour here and there, sometimes we're going to sit back on one evening of the week and go, hey, you free for some gaming? Yeah, what should we play? Ah, Trading Company. Yeah. I think it would be that sort of game. So I'm really glad to have it in my Steam library, but I'm not expecting to play it constantly.
No.
It would just be something to come back to.
I'd say on that basis, it is quite expensive what it is. And I feel bad saying that because it's £30. And, you know, you pay that for most games. But for something like this, because the match lengths are quite short, because there's limited replayability in a sense, because whilst every game is different, because you're going to have all the different ways the stock market manipulates, it's still very samey. So I kind of feel like it's maybe priced too high, which I always feel bad about saying that about indie games, because it feels harsh to say, oh, you've dedicated a ton of years of work to this, and me sat here in my comfortable chair think you're charging too much for it. I bought it when it was only £15. I think it was on sale half price when it went into early access first. I don't know that I would have given it a chance at £30, but I would. I mean, I would buy it for that much, and I think it's a great game and I enjoy playing it. But I would think, unless you're really into this kind of thing or what we've been talking about, you're like, wow, that sounds so cool, I definitely want to play that. If you're in the more sitting on the fence camp, probably wait for it to go on sale and then pick it up.
Mm.
Otherwise, definitely a good purchase.
Cool. So any final comments? Are you, well, we always ask ourselves, would we play it again and would we recommend it? The first one is obvious because we've said we would. And would you recommend it?
I think I would recommend it. I've got a lot of friends who would enjoy this game. And going back to what you said earlier about the comparison between it being kind of like a board game, I think that's a really good way of describing it. Like, if you've got friends that love board games, or you're part of a board gaming group that meets up once a week or once a month, whatever it might be, you will find people there that will love this game. For your more general real-time strategy fan, people that are playing things like Civilization or that used to play Command & Conquer games back in the day, they're probably not going to enjoy it as much, just because it's much more about money and the stock market side of things and shares and companies rather than actual, combat, that kind of stuff. Most of the target audience for an RTS are interested in tanks and planes and bombing stuff, whereas this is definitely not that. so I would say, yes, I would definitely recommend it to all of my geeky friends, but I probably wouldn't recommend it to my friends that are fans of the RTS genre generally.
And I think I sit in exactly the same camp. I mean, if you love board games and you're that kind of numbers geek, then just buy it at 30 quid. It's worth yeah. that. If you're not sure if you're going to like it, then as we know, everything goes on sale on Steam at various intervals. So
add it to your wish list and get a notification when it goes on sale.
Yeah, and then get it when it's £10 or £15. I still think you'll enjoy it, but you know, there's a chance. It is very different. There's a chance you won't. But I think it's a good game, and I can recommend it to a lot of my friends who I know would like this sort of game. So
this is a great game to go and look at it on Twitch or something like that, or see like a Let's Play video on YouTube, so you can really see it like and understand what's going on. Because us describing it, it's probably very hard for people to picture in their minds kind of how this looks and plays. So it's worth going on Twitch. Like if you're on the fence, you're not quite sure, have a look, see some videos of people playing it, just 10 minutes, and you can sort of get a feel for how it looks and plays, and that'll give you a better idea.
Cool. Well, you've been listening to Connecting to Host. Thanks ever so much for your time. I've been John Wordsworth, joined by my good friend Ben Dodson, and you can check out some more episodes on our website, www.connectingtohost.co.uk. Follow us on Twitter at CTHcast, and don't forget to drop us a friendly little review on iTunes if you get the chance. So thanks again for listening.